Okay. Hi, everybody. We are now on Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 36. We had a little trouble today with failing servers. There have been some storms here in Arizona, and I got knocked off the internet twice. So that produced one 50-minute webinar and another 20 minutes. The last one worked pretty well. We were considering a number of tasks which the Tibetan intends to undertake in this book, and the first task has to do with comparison of the five and seven rays and the centers with which they are related. The second task has to do with the energy of the three major constellations and the zodiacal constellations through which they may pour, focusing then in three streams through Leo, Pisces, and Capricorn. And I offered some speculations as to the major constellations through which the zodiacal constellations through which the three might pour. But this, of course, remains to be seen. At least on page 50, DK has given us the tabulation showing us that the Great Bear pours through Aries and Libra. I added Aquarius speculatively, then they all focus through Leo. He tells us that Sirius pours through Cancer and Capricorn. I added Virgo speculatively, and they all pour through Pisces. And when it comes to the Pleiades, DK gives us Gemini and Sagittarius. I added Taurus. A strong a connection with the Pleiades, because when you look through the constellation Taurus, you do see the Pleiades, at least at this time in cyclic history, and they pour finally through Capricorn. So this is quite an abstruse aspect of the work, and we'll see where it can end, what it can lead to. At least DK was very definite in discussing the importance in the present day and age of the Leo, Pisces, Capricorn triangle, with all its association with various planets and planetary centers and the centers of the human being. That sixfold chart will appear in various places as we study the book. And here is some of that. Leo through Saturn through the head center and base of the spine. Pisces through Uranus with the heart center and solar plexus, and the Pleiades through Capricorn and thence Mercury, as well as the Ajna and the throat center. Okay, we talked about the density of the sacral center and why it is a center, even in a way more densely related than the base of the spine center, which is related to the etheric body. Check in the vicinity of Cosmic Fire 169 and 170 for the assignment to the various planes of the major centers. And now we did task number three. We discussed it and went through this tabulation concerning the cardinal, fixed, and mutable cross and analyzed that fairly closely. These are some of DK's major triplicities that he's discussing so often in his books, and we line them up with the cardinal, fixed, and mutable crosses. Now I think we are ready. Yes, we got as far as page 80, and now task number four that DK is going to undertake with us in this large section of the book up to approximately page 404. I hope we get that far. Elaborate the subject of the interplay between the three groups of ruling planets as given in tabulation 6. So that's the exoteric, esoteric, and hierarchical rulers. These and the totality of their effects are the agencies through which the presence, through which the purposes of God are wrought out. Now, what do we mean by God? You know, we don't mean the absolute deity of the entire cosmos, but we do mean God the planetary logos. We do mean God the solar logos, especially. The solar logos is the one in whom we live and move and have our being. There is only one God. Of course, there's only one God, but all the other entities are emanations of that one God and are therefore emanatively and pantheistically aspects of that one God, who is the universal Logos by another name. So God, the solar Logos, is working out his purposes through the planetary Logoi, and we certainly have to figure out what the purpose is for our Earth, a center of redemption, I think, in relation to the previous solar system. All right, so he tells us that before proceeding with the more technical aspects of our subject, I would like to elaborate this theme of the zodiac, its story, and symbolism from the more philosophical and spiritual angle, giving you the subjective picture of man's progress as he passes on the sweep of the sun along the path of life. Heracles, the sun god, we, the sun god, we, the solar identity, sweeping along the path of life and improving our mechanism and expanding our consciousness. We may be experiencing once again degraded audio. Let us hope not. Okay. All right. The sweep of the sun along the path of life. Well, there is certainly the sweep of the sun during the year. There is the sweep of the sun along the 2160 year path. And finally, the sun passes through all the signs at the rate of 1 degree per 72 years and takes approximately 25,000 years. DK rounds it off as 25,000 years, but I think the closer figure is 25,920 if the number 2160 is accurate. And you'll recognize that 2160 as one half of the important number 432. 432. All right, the sweep of the sun along the path of life. This is a technical phrase and refers to the activity of a sun, a planet, a hierarchy, or a man, after there has been a moment of crisis. Because, you know, the path of life may not simply be the path of evolution. It may be the path of the life aspect following a moment of crisis and reorientation. A moment of crisis resulting in a period of polarization, a fixing of the consciousness at a certain requisite level of vibration, leading inevitably to a fresh surge and sweep onwards. I'm sure we have all experienced the difference between fatigue, which may overcome us from time to time, and that fresh surge and sweep onwards. Sounds very much like the leading Arician Aries impulse. These three words, crisis, polarization, and sweep, crisis, tension, emergence, is another way of dealing here. We have a triplicity called crisis, tension, and emergence. And when we do emerge, we sweep along because the obstacles are overcome. So crisis and polarization requires holding a point of tension at the requisite level of vibration, and then the sweep forward. This is our history. It's not just one continuous unobstructed movement towards the goal. There are always cross currents to deal with, the overcoming of those cross currents, the fixing or polarization of our consciousness at a new altitude or level of vibration, and then activity once that level of vibration or polarization or point of tension is stabilized. These three words, then, crisis, polarization, and sweep, are the basis of cyclic law and govern the evolutionary process. We can ask, can we connect these with the three crosses? Can we connect these with the first three rays? Can we call crisis related to the first ray, polarization to the second, and sweep the activity of the third? Is that one way to look at it? The triplicities can be reconciled. From the point of view of humanity, the passage of the sun around the zodiac is apparently a slow, laborious process, taking approximately on the plane of time, inferring there is a plane of timelessness, 25,000 years, approximately. The great Platonic ages are given as 25,000 years. Maybe at times they are more, maybe at times they are less. We seem to be living in a period when the great Platonic age is more specifically about 25,920. DK is choosing an average figure, a very laborious process. The passage of the sun around the zodiac of constellations, but also, in a way, the zodiac of signs, is a slow process, 1 degree every 72 years, a slow and laborious process. Where were any one of us 25,000 years ago? If we accept the idea of reincarnation, we certainly were somewhere. What sort of civilization or non-civilization were we in? What were we learning? What was our degree of elevation compared with what it is now? 25,000 years is a long time. Much can be on the plane of time. Much can be accomplished during such a period if we realize that in approximately 4,000 years, the Master Jesus moved from being a second-degree initiate to a sixth-degree Chohan. Just 4,000 years, let us say, 25,000 years is a long time. Perhaps if we could look back at that period, we would find ourselves very different from how we are now. From the angle of inner vision, and not on the plane of time, it is a sweep around the path of life, taking only a moment of time. The reason only a moment of time is because any definite period of time is as an infinitesimal when compared with eternal duration. And the consciousness of the great beings, the masters and Chohans, has taken into itself the reality of eternal duration. They feel eternal duration. They live in eternal duration. Thus, even though we have a 25,000-year period, it's just the blink of an eye, as is, paradoxically, any vast period of definite time. When you compare some definite span to endless duration, all definite spans reduce to an infinitesimal, or like I like to call it, an infinitesimal lizing. Because infinitesimal, mathematically it can be defined, but it becomes less and less and less and never becomes nothing. Okay. And obliterating past, present, and future in the radiant glory of the work accomplished. So there is the sense of living in the eternal, eternal now. The sense of living in the eternal now and rejoicing in the radiance of that eternal now. Because after all, it does no good to become impatient about eternal duration. We always have been. We always will be. We can never be absent. We must always be present. And when I say we, I don't mean the personal we. I mean the one principle of being, which we are, and the principle of be-ness, which we even more fundamentally are, though that cannot be defined. So it takes only a moment of time from the inner vision, which somehow comprehends eternity, and you get lost in the joy, the creative joy of doing whatever the task is, knowing that you have always had and will have forever. Now that's a very different state of mind from the harried, worried, time-pressed state of mind that so many of us in the Western, in which so many of us in the Western world live. I certainly include my time-pressed self. Or, not self, really. Okay. Now we are dealing with the crosses and the signs. Pages 81 to 90, and we will follow man from sign to sign. Backwards, by the way, on the regressive wheel, the clockwise wheel, as he in travail and pain, and travail, it means work, and to a degree it means movement and travel, in travail and pain forges Vulcan the equipment, and develops painfully, since he's on the fourth path of pain, develops painfully the mechanism which will enable him to arrive at a major moment of crisis in his cyclic life, wherein he begins to free himself from the path of the great illusion, which is the path of dense form in a certain respect, along which he has traveled for eons from Aries to Taurus via Pisces, and reversing himself, will begin to travel the path of light from Aries to Pisces via Taurus, and will completely appropriate and utilize the energies of the signs of the zodiac and the planets in a different way, which is oriented towards his spiritual nature and not towards more deeply embedding himself in form. That moment of crisis, this is the reversal of the wheel, of which there are perhaps a few reversing moments, but that first reversal, I think, occurs somewhere in the process of the fifth petal of the egoic lotus, when a man begins to awaken to the higher of the pairs of opposites found within his consciousness. And that is the higher self, higher power, whatever we want to call it. Man at that period would not call it by the esoteric names that we call it. But anyway, there is a reorientation of the consciousness and a change in the direction of desire, and now there is a dual desire, not just towards the lower unity of the personality, but upwards towards an unknown, unspecified, sensed higher presence, which is our higher self. So we're going to take man from sign to sign as he in travail and pain. I'm sure we all are understanding that about our lives. And when we get to see the big movie, you know, with all of our lives strung point to point to point, I hope we have the objectivity to learn from it and increase our wisdom and to not become overly involved. I think by the time we're allowed to see the movie, as it were, we will have that kind of objectivity, as if we are looking almost at someone else pass through all of these experiences. But I'm sure it will be a shock, and I'm sure it will be a great learning experience. I'm reminded of the book, a great poem called The Light of Asia, by Sir Edwin Arnold, who was an eminent theosophical author in the days of the early Theosophical Society, and it talked about the Buddha under the Bodhi tree and how he saw all his lives like pearls on a string. And I think Arnold deals with some of what those lives were, even life as a tiger. Maybe that's symbolic, I don't know, but some pre-human lives were revealed. Anyway, we don't have that kind of objectivity upon our personal selves at this time. Maybe there are moments when we have returned to our soul consciousness between lives when we can see a little bit backwards and a little bit ahead, but probably only so far as it would be useful for us to see. But one day all will be revealed, all will come into the light. The memory of nature is strong, it is complete, it is exact. Nothing will escape our view, and I'm sure it will be a great learning experience. Okay, now, this changing experience is expressed for us most beautifully in the sixth section of the old commentary. There's a hint. I wonder how many sections the old commentary has. I wonder where the old commentary is kept. Sometimes it seems like it is a book like a normal book, though worn very thin. At other times it seems that it could be in a non-physical library. Certainly it's older than any of the present religions that we have. These religions, considering themselves vaunted religions, have to consider the kinds of esoteric knowledge there were in Atlantis and even in Lemuria. Of course, we believe in those things, but so many people do not. They think it's the merest fancy. And why do we believe in those things? Well, maybe having seen enough and experienced enough, it just seems to us the most reasonable, most logical, and we tend to trust those who speak of those things, the teachers of the Trans-Himalayan wisdom. From the old commentary, the cross of many changes, AAB puts in here, the mutable cross, continues with its whirling, like the swastika, carrying crucified thereon the form of a man in whom is found the seed of all illusion. That seed of all illusion, in a way, is seed of all illusion is ahamkara, or that sense of limited, separated, distinct, and permanent I-ness. Well, maybe there's nothing wrong with a permanent sense of I-ness, but it's wrong if that permanent sense of I-ness is associated with certain vehicles and interstates which one considers also to be permanent, because all of that which the observer observes are aggregations. A Buddhist word which I have used many times in the past and which was reinforced in my mind visiting the Kalachakra recently. The cross of many changes continues with its whirling, whirling down into a matter, whirling in the direction of the swastika, not the rightward-pointing swastika, but the leftward-pointing swastika, crucified thereon the form of a man. The mutable cross is all about a form in whom the seed is found, the seed of all illusions, that sense of permanent I-ness, and the sense that that I is the center of all things, and thus distorts perception so that the perceptions become illusory. When that I in Leo shrinks to the merest point and then disappears, the relinquished point, it is called, then perhaps it is possible to see in a way that is not illusory, though in a certain sense the entire universe is a great illusion, though a necessary one, when compared with absoluteness. Okay, we move on. But from the cross whereon he has been slain, as we are all crucified on one or other of the crosses, but from the cross whereon he has been slain, in though he knew it not, because he is not yet conscious, certainly not very self-conscious, the man climbs down and feels his way, feels rather than thinks his way, because he is a feeling, astrally polarized, sentient being, and feels his way with pain and many tears onto another cross. And this cross, too, does not offer complete relief, a cross of blinding light, of fiery pain, of bitter woe, and yet the cross of liberation. I'm so fond of quoting that particular part, because it relates to the four fixed signs of the zodiac: the blinding light of Taurus, the fiery pain of Leo, the bitter woe of Scorpio, and yet the cross of liberation, Aquarius, the sign of liberation. It is a stationary cross, fixed in the heavens, and guarded by the angel, the solar angel, the angel of the presence. So we see that our entire path of human evolution has many tears and much pain, and although let's just say that the tears become more purposeful and the pain more purposeful upon the fixed cross. Upon the mutable cross, we don't know why it's happening to us. What's this all about? Why is this happening to me? You know, there is a confusion about the life processes, and the man is bewildered. He doesn't know where he came from. He doesn't know where he's going. But on the fixed cross, and thereby chooses, you know, some pretty wild destinies, like the destiny of an eternal heaven or paradise after a single life, or an origin made by God this time, this soul, new and freshly made by God for one life upon this earth. Well, those who have entered the ageless wisdom and have been thinking in more philosophical and expansive terms realize how limited that way of thinking is, but it's very hard to convince anybody of their own limitations unless they themselves are in the process of outgrowing those limitations through their own frustration concerning them. There arises that mantra which is so important: surely there must be more. There must be more than this. And that opens the door for the great search in relation to which, the ageless wisdom can be so important. And here is the third stanza. Behind the cross, another cross appears, but that he may not reach. The angel guards the way, the angel of the presence, until the bull has rent and torn the man. Okay, so there the power of Taurus must, in a way, destroy the personality satisfaction and personality desire. And then the light shines forth, until the serpent dread has wrestled with the man and brought him to his knees. We jump over to Scorpio, the other sign of the fixed cross, opposite Taurus. The serpent of illusion, the dweller on the threshold, the Hydra, has wrestled with the man and brought him to his knees. As we know in the story of Scorpio, it is from one's knees that the Hydra of illusion can be lifted into the clarifying Buddhic air from which all illusion is seen for what it is, and then the lifting up into the light of the whole personality, and the man becomes Buddhically conscious, until the lion, the king of beasts, has been tamed, and the secret of the Sphinx revealed. And the secret of the Sphinx, in from one tradition, is the nature of man himself. Who are you? You know, what is it that goes on four legs in the morning, two legs in the afternoon, and three legs in the evening? It is man. You know, the little child crawling, the upright, erect man, two legs, and then, with the help of a cane, the older individual. It is man. That is one of the secrets of the Sphinx. And was it Theseus? Who was it that was able to answer the riddle of the Sphinx, I think with a little help? And then the revelation of the inner light, the inner light of true identity, the light upon the light of the soul and the light of the monad, which we can also associate with Leo, until the man has lifted up his water pot, obviously the water bearer Aquarius, and joined the ranks of those who are the water bearers, and then the flowing of the stream of life, a greater stream, will fill his water pot and drain the rancid pool and cleanse its source, and thus reveal the hidden way which leads unto the innermost light. hid by the final cross. So when we finish our task in Aquarius, which may be at the fourth or even fifth initiation, we are prepared to mount, through the sacrifice of all and the sharing of all, the final or cardinal cross. Then from the cross of man, the initiate finds his way, the cross of man, which I assume is one of the earlier crosses, passes the angel of the presence, penetrating the golden disk, and leaves behind the inner torn veil, as the Christ did, rending the veil so that the light can go through, mounts the major cross, and passes into day, the final day of true spirit illumination. The wheel for him stands still, which means time no longer exerts its spell upon him. The sun and stars for him fade out, perhaps in the oneness of all life, and a great light is seen. Now, I'll tell you what, I'm going to read this thing without my own interference, my own commentary, which is simply for the purposes of study, but is not good for the purposes of getting the feel of the great stanzas written here. The cross of many changes continues with its whirling, carrying crucified thereon the form of a man in whom is found the seed of all illusion. But from the cross whereon he has been slain, e'en though he knew it not, the man climbs down and feels his way with pain and many tears unto another cross, a cross of blinding light, of fiery pain, of bitter woe, and yet the cross of liberation. It is a stationary cross, fixed in the heavens and guarded by the angel. Behind the cross, another cross appears, but that he may not reach, the angel guards the way until the bull has rent and torn the man, and then the light shines forth, until the serpent dread has wrestled with the man and brought him to his knees, and then the lifting up into the light, until the lion has been tamed, the secret of the Sphinx revealed, and then the revelation of the inner light, until the man has lifted up his water pot and joined the ranks of those who are the water bearers, and then the flowing of the stream of life will fill his water pot and drain the rancid pool and cleanse its source, and thus reveal the hidden way which leads unto the innermost light hid by the final cross. Then from the cross of man the initiate finds his way, passes the angel and leaves behind the inner torn veil, mounts the major cross and passes into day, the final day. The wheel for him stands still, the sun and stars for him fade out, a great light is seen, and, well, the endless journey is indicated. He will tread the way of higher evolution as a liberated monad. The whole story of man is told there, and in various stanzas of the old commentary. And, you know, you think about what people believe today and the poverty of what they believe, and you think about the ageless wisdom and what it offers us. It's just incredible, invaluable, not only to be preserved, but to be promoted and to be protected. Okay. I always love that stanza. By the way, the final day, I see the greatest light, the overcoming of time. There's something I wanted to say. Yes, we must kill the king of beasts in Leo before the inner light can break forth, while we are still in that beast stage of the aggressive lower ego. There's no way the inner light can shine forth. Also, when you think about how the servers on the path of magnetic work serve from the cosmic astral plane, sending streams of pure cosmic astral energy into our astral plane, There's an analogy here about draining the rancid pool and cleansing its source, because so much of the negative emotion is drawn off and replaced by purer energy. So, you know, read that Path of Magnetic Work and how those particular masters work with the rose light, and how they work upon our systemic astral plane from the cosmic astral plane. It is a great act of service, and I find the suggestion here, the similarity here. Okay. The three crosses on Mount Golgotha were biblical symbols of these three astrological crosses, the common or mutable cross, the fixed cross, and the cardinal cross. Maybe he'll talk about the three thieves. No, I don't think he does, so I'll just mention it. It gets mentioned later in the book. The cardinal cross is where on the Lord the Christ is crucified. The mutable cross is where on the unrepentant thief is crucified, and he has no wisdom or understanding to listen to the Christ, but the repentant thief is crucified on the fixed cross. He has reoriented his life, and he believes what Jesus says, and says, and Jesus tells him that even today you will be in heaven with me before the Father. Words to that effect. So it's really amazing how the great symbols do show up during these incredible decisive moments in human history. I mean, who would look at those three crosses and think of the three crosses in the heavens and what they stand for? You know, the great liberated being is being liberated onto the cardinal cross. Jesus is passing from the no man's land, from the neither, the fixed nor cardinal cross, onto the cardinal cross after the fourth initiation, or certainly by the fifth initiation, mounting the cardinal cross. On the mutable cross, it is the cross not only of many changes, but of great ignorance. And so how in the world would one recognize the Christ truly when still blinded by the elemental life and the personality of the unrepentant thief? But when you are starting to live as a soul and you realize there is more, and you've reoriented yourself, you've reversed the wheel, and you are moving towards a spiritual life, then you can recognize the Christ. Then you can listen to Jesus. Then you can believe. So those are the symbols. Okay, I don't know if you heard that, but someone was trying to call me. I can't interrupt the webinar when that happens. Okay. Page 83. I would ask you to remember that though I shall trace the progress of the man from sign to sign around the zodiacal way, yet there is not necessarily this ordered sequence of travel or the smooth passage from sign to sign as I may portray it. This is somehow so important. You know, we've asked ourselves, how does a man travel when he's born from life to life? Is he born in the next sign in an orderly way? Does he always die in the month or sign which is placed after the sign in which he's born? And DK tells us, no, it is not necessarily so. But the word necessarily, of course, gives you pause. Not necessarily so. It may be possible that there is sequential travel. There may be times when there is sequential travel, let us say on the reverse wheel from Aries to Gemini to Aries to Taurus to Gemini to Cancer and so forth, or backwards in a sequential manner from Aries to Pisces to Aquarius to Capricorn and so forth, but not necessarily. But this is a good heuristic method. It's a method of teaching, and it's a method which gives us the sense of continuity, even though in real life it may not occur in that way. All souls come into incarnation in the sign Cancer. By that I mean that the very first human incarnation was always taken in this sign, which has been recognized down the ages as the doorway into life of those who must know death, just as the constellation Capricorn is ever regarded as another door and is called esoterically the doorway into life of those who know not death. Now, the question about the very first human incarnation being taken in Cancer has to be examined, because later he talks about that in quite a different way. All souls come into incarnation in the sign Cancer. I think, you know, there's a group incarnation in a way in the sign Cancer. By this I mean, and he does seem quite specific, that the very first human incarnation was always taken in this sign. Now, what I'd like to do is to find another reference which shows us something of this nature, but which may have a slightly different interpretation. So I'll pause just for a minute to do that. And here is what I want to say. I found the reference, and it says, Cancer, Gemini and Sagittarius are connected through their ruling planets, because Earth is more closely related to Venus than to any other planet. And thus you have the six potencies which produce release from the bondage of form, entered into in Cancer as far as the mass of humanity is concerned. By this I mean the birth of the human kingdom. And in Pisces, as far as the individual is concerned, from Esoteric Astrology 131. So we have to compare this bondage of form, with the statement that was just made about the very first human incarnation is always taken in this sign. We will put this in here, and maybe change the color a little bit, and possibly the size, because it seems the very first human incarnation is taken here, but we're talking about entering into form as far as the mass of humanity is concerned. So perhaps there is something called the incarnation of the human family in Cancer, but the term individual is used. And we have an interesting mantra connected with Pisces: go forth into matter. Now that sounds very much like the first individual incarnation. So I think we cannot come to a definite conclusion here, but must compare these different statements. You know, that's why it's so important to, well, read the books, you know, because something may be said that's very definite, but it will be modified slightly later on in the same book or in a different book, and you'll get a different perspective upon the same idea. Suffice it to say, either in Cancer and Pisces, in which Neptune is important. Neptune and the Moon are important in both, but certainly Neptune found in relation to both. We have going down into the water, into the ocean of matter. Go forth into matter. Both of these signs are connected with the ocean of matter, and the individual, the new individual, becomes the fish swimming in the ocean of matter, but swimming blindly and unconsciously. Anyway, these are amazing words when you consider Cancer as the doorway. I often mistakenly say gate, but it's doorway. The doorway into life, the life of the physical plane, of those who must know death. They must know a death of compromised consciousness. They had a great consciousness on the monadic level, but as an individualized, limited, strictured being, that type of widened consciousness dies, and they learn the death of consciousness within oppressive form. Just as the constellation Capricorn is ever regarded as another door and is called esoterically the doorway into life of those who know not death, so we are reminded here of one of the names associated with the type of will connected with Capricorn, and it's called the will that conquers death. So we, through the process of initiation, are elevated into the Arupa worlds, where we cannot be suffocated or killed by form, and we come in touch with the first aspect of divinity through Capricorn, the life aspect. Notice that in Cancer, the first aspect of divinity is not found, only the third ray and the seventh ray. But in Capricorn, the seventh ray is found, the third ray is found, and the first ray. Capricorn introduces us through the process of initiation gradually into contact with the life force, the life aspect. As the ages slip away, the man passes into and out of all the signs. We have experience in all the signs. In our thousands of lives, we have experience in all the signs. The particular sign being determined by the nature of the personality ray, which changes, itself changes, as you know, from life to life. Well, normally you would think that the personality ray would be determined by the sign. So this is one of those paradoxical statements. And the question is, we don't have an emergent personality ray during all of those lives, but maybe we have, I don't know, something called a latent personality ray. I've thought about this a long time, you know. Before the personality ray emerges, do we have a personality ray? Or has suddenly decay jumped quite a few incarnations until indeed we do have an emergent personality ray? We're born in all the signs, but can the sign be determined by the personality ray? This is a perplexing statement, because, you see, we're born in all the signs, which have different ruling planets, which express different rays, and every sign has its own emitted or transmitted ray. The constellation or the sign itself has that. But we can have a personality ray which does not accord at all with the sign in which we were born, or even the planets which express through that sign. For instance, suppose I'm a seventh ray personality. I'm going to be born in all the signs, probably. And, the question is, will I be born in all the signs when I have a particular personality ray, or does my ray have to change in order for me to be born in all the signs? Anyway, if I'm a seventh ray personality, it'd be very hard to be born in Gemini if I'm looking to Gemini to condition that ray, because through Gemini passes no seventh ray, and its rulers, which are Mercury, Venus, and the Earth, do not have the seventh ray. So this is, you know, I want to make this very big. It's one of those ponder on this statements, a very enigmatical statement. The particular sign in which you are born being determined by the nature of the personality ray, which itself changes. So if my soul, the solar angel, decides that I must have a personality ray of a certain kind, and it will not choose ray 1 or ray 2 for a personality ray, because it cannot until I am on the path, because man himself will not have a first or second ray personality until he is at least an aspirant. This is one of the quotes from DK. I can find it for you, but it was in it was not in the book so much, but it was in another set of papers that I think was given to the Arcane School. So in any case, if I have a particular type of personality ray, say the fourth ray, am I limited in that incarnation to a sign, to birth in a sign, which either through the sign or through the associated planets can reinforce or correlate with that ray? Let's just say I have a 4-3 personality, which sometimes I think I do. So anyway, this 4-3 personality, well, okay, it could be born in Gemini. It could be born in Virgo. You know, Mercury is ruling there. It could be born in Aries, because esoterically Mercury is ruling there. Possibly hierarchically, it could be born in Scorpio, because Mercury hierarchically rules there. So that's four signs in which it could be born. Now, it could also be born in Taurus, because Taurus has the fourth ray emitting or transmitting. And again, Scorpio, of course, because it's the major fourth ray sign. It could be born in Sagittarius. So what have I done here? I've looked at how many signs? Six or seven in which a fourth ray personality could be born, either because the rays are congruent or related, the rays of the planets or the rays of the signs. But some of DK's students were, let's say, they were a sixth-ray personality. They were born in Gemini, a sixth-ray personality. Nothing from Gemini is on the sixth ray. So not the planets and not the sign itself, okay? If you want to say, well, the submonadic ray of Venus is the sixth ray, okay, but that's a bit far-fetched, isn't it? Venus, the esoteric ruler, has a submonadic ray of the sixth. That's too far to go. So, as the ages slip away, the man passes into and out of all the signs, the particular sign being determined by the nature of the personality ray. Now, here's another point. Nature may not mean number. Okay, so here's nature, and I want to put in here, nature may not mean number. So we may be talking instead about the quality or condition of the personality radiation which determines the sign which is next needed by that personality radiation, presence, nature, etc. It may not mean the number. You know, so often people have looked at a statement that DK makes, that the sun determines the nature of the personality ray. I'm not quoting it exactly correctly. I'd have to look it up. But anyway, they've always looked for the number. In other words, the sun sign must somehow give the clue to the personality ray. But is it the clue to the number of the personality ray, or is the personality ray considered, in a way, the personality radiation, the quality of the personality, that which emanates from the personality, not necessarily the number of the ray? So all I can do here is point out the difficulty and the fact that it was probably unwise to jump to conclusions. In those signs, whichever signs he enters, and he will enter all of them, you know, this seems to say, well, he can't be in certain signs unless he has a certain number of personality ray. In other words, a six-ray personality can only be born in certain signs. But I tend to think, ultimately, that is not true. Because in DK's group, first-ray Gemini personality, sixth-ray Gemini personality, seventh-ray Gemini personality, no problem with the second-ray Gemini personality, and as far as 4 and 5 goes, that would be predictable. But there were 1, 6, and 7 personality rays born in Gemini, with the Sun in Gemini. So, perhaps it would not be wise for us to say that if you have a certain personality ray, you cannot be born in all the signs. And perhaps we have to look for another meaning of the word personality ray, especially when we are looking at the idea of the nature of the personality ray, the nature of it, not the number, perhaps. I know I'm repeating myself. Okay, I'm just doing that in order to reinforce the idea in my own mind so I can remember it, so I can discuss it with some people who might want to go deeper into it. In those signs, he learns the needed lessons, broadens his horizon, i.e. sees more, integrates his personality, albeit gradually, brings all the energies together into harmony, begins to sense the conditioning soul, the higher of the pairs of opposites, and thus discovers his essential duality eventually, and especially when the middle set of petals is being organized and is unfolding, he begins to sense the higher of the pairs of opposites. By the time he reaches the sacrifice petals, he has experience with the higher of the pairs of opposites and knows something of its nature, of the higher of the pairs of opposites. When he is upon the path of discipleship, and here I include the path of initiation, because if you really look at it, every initiate is the disciple of a certain kind. They're learning something, therefore they are disciplining themselves so that they can achieve that something they're learning. And the master, a master is a disciple, and even the Christ is a disciple. When he's on the path of discipleship, and here I include the path of initiation, a cult rumor. He doesn't tell us whether it's true or not, right? It's hearsay in a way. A cult rumor says that he then becomes conditioned by the tireless watcher. Not just the silent watcher, but the tireless watcher. A very interesting phrase. And is subjected during the final stages of the path to exactly 12 incarnations, passing one in each of the 12 signs. The question is, are they in order? And is a cult rumor accurate? And are there 12 incarnations, passing one in each of the 12 signs? The word in usually means you're born in a sign with the sun in a sign. If you're born under a sign, it's the rising sign you're born under. So will you have 12 incarnations with 12 different sun signs? DK leaves it in the air, and probably we have one day to learn how to understand it, probably through psychical research and the memory of past lives and the ability to read the record and so forth, as the masters can do. In these 12 signs, well, surely we all do have to prove ourselves in the 12 signs. The question is, do we have to have exactly 12 incarnations, or can we double up, as it were? Can we prove ourselves in an incarnation along our sun sign and rising sign line, and maybe a stellium line? Can we prove ourselves performing major tasks if our rising sign and sun sign are different, and can we accomplish two of these proofs in one incarnation or more? These are possibilities, but DK does not dogmatize about this. He just says, a cult rumor says. And he's not affirming it necessarily. But I'm sure we will have to prove ourselves in the 12 signs, and in them he has to prove himself attaining great moments of crisis in each of the constellations. Note how he has just changed and interchange the word signs and constellations, part of the blinding technique, attaining great moments of crisis in each of the constellations of the fixed cross, in particular Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius, from point to point, stage to stage, and finally cross to cross. He fights for his spiritual life in all the 12 houses and all the 12 constellations, although, you know, we're doing a multiple task in any one life because we have many houses going and a number of constellations or signs going, subjected to countless combinations of forces and energies, ray, planetary, zodiacal, and cosmic, until he is made anew. becomes the new man in Christ, is sensitive to the entire range of spiritual vibrations in our solar system, and has achieved that detachment which will enable him to escape from the wheel of rebirth, and this he does at the fourth initiation. He has accomplished this by mounting the three crosses, the cross of the personality or the changing form, the cross of the disciple or the eternal soul, fixed cross, and the cross of the spirit. Eventually, he is freed to be crucified upon that cross of freedom, the cardinal cross. This really means that he has passed through three momentous crises in his life cycle. And DK will now describe those momentous crises, but I am at the end. 1 hour has passed. So we are on page 84, and we have finished... which one have we finished? Was this 35, or is this 30... no, this is 36. Okay, so this is Esoteric Astrology Adventure, 36. And we have gone as far as page 84. And we will check where we began on Esoteric Astrology Adventure, 35. And that was... 35, let's try 36, okay. That's not... Well, I'll put that in there when the time is right. I'll figure it out. So, we will now do the great invocation together. Yes, and that is right there. Great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. This one, and we will resume with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 37, continuing the completion of the introductory remarks. Until then, we'll see you.